This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Housing starts fell. Not as many new homes going up in March. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishore in for David Brancaccio. Housing starts, as in the number of new homes being built, dropped 0.3% in March, lowest level since May of 2017. Is that a sign of trouble or no big deal? Let's ask Chris Lowe, chief economist at FDN Financial in New York. Good morning.
Good morning, Sabri.
So U.S. home building dropped to basically a two-year low. And what's weird about that is that mortgage rates have fallen as well. You'd think people would be building more homes. So what's going on?
Home sales have been particularly weak this year. And that's partly because mortgage rates rose as much as they did over the course of last year when the Fed was raising interest rates. So as you said, we do have some relief. And the home sales numbers are starting to come off the bottom. I'm not too worried about it.
Why not? Why aren't you worried?
GDP growth last year was more than decent. We had 3% growth, and we did it with declines in residential investment every single quarter. We've gotten to the point where the economy is perfectly healthy with housing doing whatever housing is doing, whether it's up or down. And I think that's actually pretty healthy.
Christopher Lowe, chief economist at FTN Financial in New York. Good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you, Sabri.
What was once Sears department store before its bankruptcy owes a lot of money to a lot of people. And those people are now suing Sears' former CEO, Eddie Lampert. They allege Lampert defrauded them by stripping the company of more than $2 billion in assets when he was in charge. Marketplace's Renata Sego has been looking into this. Good morning, Renata.
Hey.
So we know that Sears filed for bankruptcy back in October, and then Lampert bought the company back a few months ago. So what is going on now?
Sears debt holders are saying the company's CEO, Eddie Lampert, had been profiting off of Sears losses for years. He and his hedge fund, ESL Investments, held the largest stake in the company from 2011 to 2015. Debt holders say during that time, Lampert was intentionally rejecting deals that could save Sears in order to bring his own company billions of dollars. I spoke with Eric Gordon, who teaches business at the University of Michigan. He says these kinds of suits against CEOs come up all the time, and that it's about being able to prove the CEO wasn't just making bad decisions.
They can't prove his state of mind, but they can infer his state of mind. They can infer, well, he knew that the ship was going down, so he loaded cargo off onto his own ship.
And the debt holders list examples of what they think show that.
What would that be? Like what?
They say Lampert turned down an offer from a private equity firm to buy Lands' Inn for $1.6 billion just so he could keep control of the brand. They say he created a real estate firm that bought some of Sears' best stores for less than their actual value. Lampert and ESL have denied these claims. They say Sears got $3 billion from the various deals which helped them pay down the company's debt.
And who else is named in the suit? I understand there's a particular name of interest there.
The company's former directors are including Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin. He was on Sears' board before President Trump appointed him.
All right. Marketplace's Renata Sego. Thanks.
My pleasure.
Route 66 was once known as the Main Street of America. It stretched from Chicago to Santa Monica. In its heyday, it was well-traveled. But that all changed in the 1980s when an interstate highway bypassed Route 66. Dozens of places along the route went from boom towns to ghost towns. A federal grant program has tried to help them out, but it's scheduled to end in the fall. From Flagstaff, Arizona, KJZZ's Laurel Morales reports.
In the 1950s and 60s, 500,000 people a year traveled Route 66, stopping along the way to see roadside attractions like a collection of live rattlesnakes, or spend the night in a teepee at a motel, or have their pictures taken in a large covered wagon. Williams, Arizona is one of the towns that lost visitors when traffic moved from Route 66 to the interstate. Two decades later, when entrepreneur Mike Bessler arrived, the town was still depressed.
A lot of businesses went out, and there was a lot of storefronts that were empty, broken windows that weren't being fixed.
But thanks in part to a federal grant program, Bessler and other business owners have brought back the tourists. Many come from Europe, and they know the old song. Bessler and his wife own a souvenir shop in Williams. They sell everything from Route 66 keychains to cap guns and dream catchers. A decade ago, the Besslers won a $6,000 federal grant to help them fix the out-of-date electricity in their century-old store.
It was unbelievably necessary because it was a potential fire hazard.
The grant was part of the Route 66 Corridor Preservation Program authorized by Congress. Now it's unclear whether lawmakers will renew it. At stake is more than $2 million aimed at reviving old tourist spots in struggling towns. Kaisa Barthuli manages the program for the National Park Service.
We've been able to work with mom-and-pop owners and local leaders to help restore and bring back a lot of these wonderful little jewels in the rough and bring new life into the community in the form of heritage tourists.
The program's term is up in September, but Congress is considering a measure that would still provide some funds for communities along Route 66. It would require businesses to work more closely with the National Park Service to get the money. In Flagstaff, I'm Laurel Morales for Marketplace.
AMI is selling the National Enquirer to magazine distributor James Cohen. Cohen's family built the chain of Hudson stores, those shops you see in airports. AMI admitted last year to buying the rights to a story of an alleged affair between President Trump and a Playboy model and then never publishing it as a way of helping out the Trump campaign. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishour with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.